Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Europe continues its march towards war and the crushing of political dissent with the center of democratic resilience. Also, even the mainstream media is beginning to admit the Kiev regime's defenses are crumbling. Europe is not on a first-name basis with reality. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with George in Budapest. What is this Center for Democratic Resilience, okay? Sounds rather benign, is it?
I don't think it is benign. I mean, obviously, at a certain level, it's a make jobs program. There's a lot of money splashing around, so a lot of people are going to be employed. But fundamentally, it's a deeply anti-democratic process, the whole point of which is to censor speech that the important people, the powers that be in Europe, don't like. And it is clear, remember, Ursula von der Leyen had already some time ago said that, like, the key is not debunking, but pre-bunking. So that's what she's after. So in other words, to censor information before it even comes out. You know, Americans thinking, well, that's prior restraint, but that's exactly what she has in mind. And it's clear that the model is what they did in Romania. It's always, they always bring that up, is that, oh, well, remember, you know, we had this Russian interference and we just canceled an election. And now this is the model that they're everywhere. It's ubiquitous. We have Russian interference here, Russian interference, hybrid warfare, cyber attacks, information attacks. So therefore, we are justified in doing whatever we need to do, whether it's censoring speech or canceling elections or just simply, you know, arresting people that we don't like. So it's a very sinister operation. But she had already announced it that the her State of the Union, bogus, fraudulent, anti-democratic State of the Union. And I think they're going ahead with it. I mean, clearly, because the recent election results have not favored the war party that she represents.
You know, it seems to me, Mark, this is not, I mean, they frame it as being, you know, against the Russian disinformation, against Chinese disinformation. This is what some leaked reports have suggested here. But I don't think it's really against any kind of external threat. It is more a censorship process to maintain the quote-unquote party line, meaning to crowd out other arguments and ideas. I mean, even in these leaked reports, I think it was The Guardian, that they will be recruiting their influencers and things like this. So it's message management. It's not really a defensive measure.
Yeah, this Center for Resilience Against Democracy, because that's essentially what it is, right? They're afraid. They are deeply afraid, not just of the EU's fading geopolitical position into irrelevance and impotence in the world. Not just against Russia and China, right? They're deeply afraid of their own people. Ultimately, they don't trust them. They talk repeatedly about, you know, in these Orwellian Ministry of Truth terms against blocking deceitful narratives, because you should only listen to our narratives, right? And ultimately, yeah, the majority of this is about foreign policy, right? Because there is an accepted foreign policy orthodoxy, right, of the maintenance and pursuit of U.S.-led Western global hegemony. And then there's everything else, which is verboten. And you're not allowed to consider, right? Forget, I mean, RT, you know, Sputnik, everything's already banned in the EU anyway. It's those within the European Union, right, their own people, whom, you know, say, hey, actually, this better reflects reality than the narratives that are coming out of Brussels. And that needs to be purged. And bringing up Romania is the most ironic example of all, because quite clearly it wasn't Russia who, I don't know, with Facebook memes or whatever, that intervened in the elections in Moldova and Romania in particular. it was the European Union. I mean, they literally canceled
They never presented any evidence to back up their claims.
Pavel Durov, the founder of Telegram, was quite open that, you know, the leaders of the EU, Macron and others, came to him and, you know, we'll stop pursuing charges against you, false charges, persecuting you, if you help us censor all of these Moldovan and Romanian right-wing, or other, left-wing voices that don't agree with the technocratic hegemonic center. So that is what, and they're afraid of that narrative being called out for what it is, because they want to continue to manipulate, to manage politics in the rest of the EU and the EU's near abroad. And, any narratives that counter theirs from within or from without are quite frankly, eroding their fantasy position to reality.
Well, and also it's been reported or leaked at this point, because I think it's going to be a few days this initiative is going to be made public, George, is that the aspirants to join the EU strongly suggesting that you get on board with this, okay? I think it's interesting if we look at the Romanian I agree with Mark, it's just so ironic. I mean, that was the shutting down of democracy. It wasn't protecting it. George, it's very interesting that if this becomes EU-wide policy, so the German government really doesn't have to ban the AfD. The EU will. This is one of the things that it could do with this initiative.
That's exactly right. And it's clear that this is the direction in which it's going. And we talked the other day about this discovery on the part of the German authorities, that somehow the AfD was spying on behalf of Russia. When you ask for evidence, of course, they don't present any evidence at all,
And parliamentarians can't ask questions about the functioning of the state.
That's right. That was their evidence, that the AfD elected representatives were asking pointed questions about Germany's military readiness, Germany's
George.
Military preparedness.
George, and asking questions is dangerous.
It's very
unpatriotic.
Extremely. And so this prepares, essentially, the German authorities to ban the AfD. They've tried everything else. I mean, they've called it Hitler, Nazi, fascist, undemocratic. They've spied on the AfD for years. And it hasn't worked. I mean, it's still the number one party in Germany. So there's only one thing for it. Well, they're working for Russia. They're working for Putin. And since there is this drumbeat for going to war with Russia at some point, 2030, whatever, then we have to start preparing for this war with Russia. Well, obviously, if we're at war with Russia, we need to ban Putin's fifth column in Europe. And this goes together with this visa restrictions that have been imposed on Russians, because apparently every Russian tourist who, wants to see the sights in Europe is actually working for the Kremlin, doing some sabotage, terrorist, spying work, and therefore he must be kept out. It's a privilege to visit the EU.
Considering her privileged background, it's a bit rich. Mark, this is all part and parcel of the drive to war, preparing Western publics that they are at war. They must sacrifice their coveted social programs. They have to relinquish your speech rights in the European Union are actually quite limited, but they're going to even more truncated. So this is just preparing the body public for the war of choice that the EU, using NATO, wants to pursue. It seems this is just preparing the public's manipulation, Mark.
Yeah, the German Chancellor, Herr Merz, has been quite open about this, that the German have to accept the German people have to accept a lowered living standard, right? They have to accept less benefits to pursue this proxy war against Russia in Ukraine. Warfare, not welfare, right? That's the tune. And first of all, it has to be said, this cockamamie Center for Resilience Against Democracy, this is the umpteenth such disinformation outlet, centered around the conflict in Ukraine that the EU and various organs have put out. None of them have been at all effective, right? With the goal of, mainshoring the propaganda firewall, of their own population. They failed again. And there's no reason to believe that this will be any different or received any better by the European people. But the European people had better wake up, because there are quite a number of powerful people within this Brussels technocratic elite and within the national political parties, in the UK, in France, in Germany, in Scandinavia, and others that are dead set on going to war with Russia and in drafting the European peoples who, by and large, do not want to go to war against Russia in Ukraine. They talk about it all the time. The Guardian had an article out in the last week that the British military wants to send troops into Ukraine now. And I'm like, yeah, them and what army? Because the British doesn't have an army. The Kiev regime has had more deserters from their military in the past 3 years than the armies of the UK, Germany, and France put together. Think about that. And we heard it also from Mark Rutte. We heard it from the Prime Minister of Sweden, right? They are, even if this conflict ends, the conflict with Russia will continue. Anders Fogh Rasmussen was trotted out of retirement back to the hegemonic center stage to say we must put troops in Ukraine to fight Russia now.
Well, George, you're in a NATO country. How many Hungarians think they're gonna be able to convince to go fight in Ukraine now?
I don't think there are very many, but it's a curious phenomenon is that all this belligerent talk from innumerable European capitals, and still one kind of wonders, where are the troops for all of this? Now, it's possible that they could throw in huge financial incentives, free university, free healthcare for the rest of your life, or something like that, and thereby put together some kind of a
George, force. Immigrants.
The troops are in America. That's the only place where troops to fight Russia are. They're in Peoria. They're in Illinois. They're in Michigan. This is what it's all about, is drawing the U.S. into the war.
Is that what you voted for? Okay, all right, gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news, and the news I want to talk about now with Mark is, after all this time since the start of the special military operation, all three of us, for years and years now, have been trying to distinguish reality from fantasy in Western media, and it's slowly crumbling away. Ukraine's in trouble, okay? At least they can admit that right now, okay? They have to continue justifying wasting vast resources where nobody really knows where it goes. Maybe they don't want to ask that question now. But the media is beginning to sober up because they know it's going to lose, and it's something that was alluded to in the first part of the program. This is no longer about Ukraine. If it was ever about Ukraine, this is all about the upcoming conflict with Russia.
Yeah, all along the contact line, the Kiev regime forces, the defensive, urban centers are crumbling. They're not collapsing. Right? They are crumbling. And foremost of those, at least in the media's perception, is Pokrovsk, a former important logistics and transport hub that was at one point in the operational rear of the Kiev regime forces and will soon be in the tactical rear of Russian forces and forming a transport and logistics center for them. 95% of Pokrovsk Plus is already in Russian hands. There's only a few holdouts. What Russia has done is actually herded the troops, created a kind of golden corridor, not towards the Kiev regime's maintaining settlements in the Donbass to the northwest, but rather to the east, to an agglomerated settlement called Mirnograd. And there's probably several thousand Kiev regime forces completely isolated, completely surrounded, encircled cauldron in Mirnograd right now. And the Russian forces, the Kremlin seems set on forcing a surrender, right? To bring home, you know, the state of the conflict to the people in Ukraine, to the people in the West, so that they can't deny the reality of the situation anymore with several thousand Kiev regime forces forced to surrender to Russia. That's the goal there. But it's not just Pokrovsk. Kupansk is maybe a week away in southern Kharkov. Liman, Konstantinovka, and Seversk are also only a few weeks behind. And by then, Russia will be moving in the spring on the last holdouts, Slavyansk and Kramatorsk and Donbass, but they'll also be moving heavily into the Dnepropetrovsk region, right? A whole operational space opening to the west, no settlements, open steppe from Pokrovsk, and also in the Kharkov region. There's no hope for the Kiev regime at this point, at anything east of the Dnieper River. And that's why the cries, the desperation, the outrage to do something. And the only thing, they sanctions have failed. The Belgians are refusing to let the Europeans put them on the line for stealing Russia's assets to try to fund the regime for another year in Kiev. And the only thing they have left is putting their own men and women on the line in Ukraine, not because they have any hope of defeating a Russian military there. Let's be serious about that. 10,000, 20,000 European troops, again, 800,000 battle-hardened Russian troops. The European powers can't even provide the Kiev regime with munitions and equipment, much less their own forces. This is all about bringing America into the conflict.
Exactly. This is a tripwire they want to do. But I don't think that the Trump people are going to go for it, George. I just don't, okay? Donald Trump can change his mind at the drop of a hat. We all know that. But there's something that we've all talked about. It seems to me the latest pivot that Trump has made, and not so subtle, by the way, is that let the Europeans resolve this one way or another. But the just tripwire thing, you're absolutely right, Mark. I mean, why would you, George, why would you commit a few thousand troops into a conflict that you know that the ally that you're supporting is losing and losing massively? Why would you do that?
Well, you obviously wouldn't, but I think that's where you've and Mark has pointed this out. The key is to get America in, and so therefore the key is to do something whereby the Europeans can scream Article 5, Article 5, Article 5, and therefore we have to defend ourselves. And we, you know, Russia.
How can you be defending yourself if you send troops to Ukraine? You're not defending yourself.
I don't think it does. But it's very interesting, though, that the way the media covered it. The media covered it now is that Russia is a threat to Europe. Russia is going to attack Europe. And that, therefore, if Russia prevails in Ukraine, then the next step will be an attack on a NATO member state. So therefore, there has to be a preparation for that. So all of this is about provoking some kind of a shooting match with Russia and thereby screaming Arctic Void. Now, I actually do think, though, that this frozen assets, they are going to apply enough pressure against Belgium to compel Belgium to cave. I mean, there really going on and on almost every day against Belgium. And I think eventually Belgium will agree to give in. So that will give them a little bit more time. And the more time that they have, and the more of this constant
Trump-y no, hang on, gentlemen. Well, is it really money that's going to keep change anything? I mean, this is a sunk cost fallacy, Mark. I mean, you can keep pouring money into it. It's not going to change anything.
You can pour all the money. First of all, it doesn't magically create weapons because of the moribund Western military-industrial complex. But more than that, it doesn't create people, right? Manpower. The BBC was forced to admit that just in October, just the publicly known number, which is probably half the real size, 21,000 Ukrainian troops deserted just in October, right? We're well over 200,000 total, and no one knows where Zelensky's million-man army on paper is. Why? I can tell you, they're filling cemeteries all the way from Western Donbass, you know, all the way to Lvov. That's where they are, and it's reality. Reality. The situation that has occurred economically, militarily, politically, it doesn't fit into the worldview of the European and the Western ruling elite. They can't accept it. They can't. It challenges their worldview of their place in the world, right? You know, the supremacist messianic exceptionalism. How can we be defeated by this gas station with, you know, masquerading as a country, by this Nigeria with snow, as they've derided Russia? They can't accept reality. So they've locked themselves into a desperate, rabid cycle of their own paranoia, their own political capital that they've sunk into this, and their delusions. And they're trying to drag the rest of the European people into that hysteria, right, by beating the drums. Oh, Russia's going to attack Lisbon next week unless we go to war with them in Ukraine tomorrow, right? But more than that, you know, of course, they ultimately need to drag the Americans back into this. And it must be said that while Trump seems reticent to this, and I think J.D. Vance as well, there are plenty of people within the administration who are not. And there are even more within the U.S. deep state and within the U.S. media, right? The Western media. Yep. The pressure on Donald Trump will be enormous. And let's face it, Taco hasn't lived up to the challenge of having political endurance against voices raised against him thus far.
So, George, you know, again, we're not really talking about policy. I think that's what makes these conversations so difficult, because we're talking about the whims of an individual. I thought we were way, way beyond that. I thought, you know, it's just like institutions, ideology, you know, strategy. No, it gets down the way the picture both of you have painted. It's Trump's call.
It is Trump's call, and it was quite remarkable when he sat next to Viktor Orban, who was, I think, the most articulate spokesman. Oh, pretty much the only spokesman in Europe for bringing this war to an end immediately, is that when Orban, he clearly went in with a strategy to explain the situation in Ukraine and said Ukraine cannot win this war, and that the Europeans are absolutely deluding themselves and deluding you, Mr. President, by suggesting that Ukraine can defeat Russia. And then and Trump was, a little taken aback by that, and sort of asked, you mean you don't think Ukraine can win this war? And then, and you know, Orban just said humorously, well, miracles can happen. But it was very important that he pointed this out. After all, Orban knows that Trump had only a few weeks ago stated Ukraine can win this war. Ukraine can drive out the Russians, and Ukraine can even take territory inside Russia. So, Trump needed reminding that this is a folly, this is a delusional. And I think Trump just seemed a little bemused by that, you know, this message. That's why I agree with Mark that it could well be forces that will prevail upon Trump to escalate the situation in Ukraine. After all, Trump was willing to go to Budapest just a few weeks ago and ready to work out a deal.
Well, okay, all right.
So then he changed his position.
Mark, what does that mean? American troops? No fly zone. I mean, what does that mean? Getting the
American. No one has any idea what it means. Let's be frank. They have no idea what war with Russia would entail, right? I mean, Russia is capable of long-range strikes across Europe right now, you know, with impunity against European capitals if it came to that. Russian air defense and electronic warfare flying, you know, the West's vaunted air forces into that in Ukraine would be a massacre. They would be out of their safety zone and into the, you know, the bear's tromping grounds. It's not realistic. Furthermore, what I think it means politically in the U.S., contrary, I would argue against what you said. If Trump is dragged even to a degree back into this, it proves that, you know, the president doesn't actually really have that power. Right. It's institutions. It's nothing sexy. There's no grand conspiracy or Illuminati. It's just the power of institutions that are all in some level of agreement about the pursuit of hegemony, the military industrial complex, the State Department, the media, the universities, the think tanks. How do you root that out?
Okay, gentlemen, I was under the impression that elections have consequences, but I've been proven wrong. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.